Hey everybody, welcome to an edition of Project 4-4 coming at you from Christ Community Church. My name is Mark Ashton. I'm the lead pastor at Christ Community Church and one of the architects of Project 4-4. And just wanted to say hey to everybody out there. In case you're interested and you're not from Christ Community Church, our website is www.cccomaha.org and you can feel free to check things out there. Well, today in your daily reading, you've been taking a look at Numbers chapter 12, 13, and 14, and today is February 8th. Now, because I want to camp out in Numbers 13 and 14 today, I'll only briefly comment on chapter 12. In the story of Miriam and Aaron, the problem is quite apparent, and it's describable in one rather ugly but common word: jealousy. Moses was more important than they were. He was also more humble, and therein lies the answer as to why God chose to use Moses instead of other leaders. If you're ever tempted to be jealous of somebody, particularly someone that God seems to be using more than you, or if someone who gets more attention than you makes you jealous, then I want you to stop and remember two things. First, and that is a verse that we looked at in James chapter 3, verse 1. Not many of you should presume to be teachers, my brothers, because you know that those who teach will be judged more strictly. Moses may have gotten more attention, but he had an awful lot more responsibility, and the burdens on him were much greater as well. Second, remember that Moses, Jesus, Paul, John, and all the others got great by stepping down, not up. Again, from the book of James, humble yourselves before the Lord and he will lift you up. Exalt yourself and God will remove you painfully. Humble yourself, become a servant, and he will lift you up. That's the Bible's path to greatness. Jealousy is a sure sign that the problem is not with someone else. The problem is with me. Well, moving on into Numbers chapter 13 and 14, for some of you, the story of Caleb, Joshua, and the other 10 spies who went in to spy out the promised land and who brought back two diametrically opposed recommendations is a very familiar one. Nevertheless, in spite of the familiarity of the story, there's some things here that perhaps you've never noticed before, and I'd like to underscore for you in the next moments that we have together. First of all, this chapter is usually read, and in this case as well in the Daily Bible, without the benefit of a parallel account found over in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 1, verses 19 through 26. Most of us have never understood that sending the spies in to check out the advance checkout of the land, that was not God's plan. It was an idea that came from the nation of Israel. We won't spend too much time looking at it today, but feel free to check that passage out for yourself. Now, since the idea of sending the spies came from the Israelites, they came to Moses with it, probably because they were afraid to go, and they just didn't want to take that big old leap of faith. Their idea sounded okay to him, and he apparently asked the Lord, and the Lord let them have what they wanted. This makes me think that sometimes when God reveals his plan and purpose, we're very anxious to improve upon his plan. Has this ever been true of you, kind of trying to improve on God's plan? He tells you to do one thing and you come back with him, well, how about this? I think I might have a better idea. This is a dangerous thing to do. Now, sometimes in God's providence, he gives us what we want, but whenever it happens, it's always a second best on what God had originally intended for us. The next thing that I want you to notice is the opposition to entering the promised land had nothing to do with the goodness of the land or the promises of God or any disappointment with anything that God told them about it. In fact, the fruit they brought back and the reports about the land proved that it was indeed a land flowing with milk and honey. They brought these big honking grapes back and they told them stories about how amazing this land was. So there's nothing bad about the land. The problem stemmed from their fear that they would not be able to possess the land because of the strength and size of the cities and the people who lived there. They said, the Nephilim live there. Now, the Nephilim, of course, is a race of very large people that we first encountered in Genesis chapter 6, and now we see they're still occupying the land of Canaan. In this Numbers passage, we have confirmation that the Nephilim were huge people. It would be like trying to take the land from a race of Shaquille O'Neal lookalikes. And the people of Israel said, compared to them, we look like grasshoppers. There's something else here that may not at first be immediately obvious, and it has to do with the numbers involved. As nearly as we can tell, apart from Moses himself, only two men, Joshua, the son of Nun, who was Moses' apprentice, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, were willing to risk everything on faith. All of the others, including the 10 other spies, 600,000 men over the age of 20, including the Levites, including Aaron's family, all of them sided with the 10 spies who lacked faith. I mean, what is up with that? Do you see how contagious fear and unbelief can be, especially in the sight of risks of faith? They are more contagious than the deadliest disease. This fear is so infectious that only Moses and two faith-filled men are willing to stand against it. And soon the multitude is afraid, not only of the command of God to go in and possess the land, but also of the three men who weren't afraid. Let's do a quick activity for a moment here. Just based on your reading this morning and this devotion so far, what were the names of the two spies that said, yes, we should go into the land? Do you remember their two names? I'll bet you do. Caleb and Joshua. Now, without looking back at the text, you just read it before you looked at this video. What were the names of any two of the 10 spies who said, don't go? Bet you can't remember. I mean, their names are included in the history book as faithless people, but nobody really remembers who those guys were. It is so with people who stand for fear instead of standing for faith. They don't accomplish great things, and they're forgotten by the multitudes. Whenever you're faced with something, if you know for sure that you are on God's side in that matter, remember one person plus God makes a majority. What God's calling you to do, you need to step out in faith and make it happen. When God's in the midst, even if there's opposition, you need to go with what God tells you to do. Well, the mob gets ugly. There's much sentiment for stoning all three of these reckless adventurers on the spot, electing a new leader, returning to Egypt. And I think that they would have done it, except that at just the right moment, the glory of the Lord appeared at the tent of meeting and threw them into even more fear and confusion. And God has the last word. He always has the last word. Moses and Caleb and Joshua are vindicated, and the verdict is pronounced. All the unbelieving generation will die in the wilderness over a 40-year period. They've already seen tons of miracles. They should have faith in God by now, but apparently they are just not well molded for this task. And God says, it'll be a generation before anybody winds up going in. And God makes good on his word. Only Joshua and Caleb will be allowed to go in and to possess the land because they were the ones who responded in faith. The 10 faithless spies die immediately, victims of a divine plague, and for the 100th time, the people of Israel finally conclude that they have sinned, and once again they ask for God's forgiveness. One last thing, and this is painful. God did forgive Israel. Chapter 14 tells us that, but the consequences were still there. They lost the opportunity to go into the promised land in their generation, to be the first ones to be famous for believing God and entering into the promised land. When they realized what they had done, they said to Moses, okay, we're sorry, let's go now. And they tried to, but it was too late to secure the blessing. Did you notice that? Israel actually marched toward the promised land on the theory that belated obedience might win back the favor of God, but Moses didn't go with them. And more importantly, the presence of God did not go with them. The tabernacle stayed where it was because the cloud that signified the presence of God didn't move. God wasn't in it. And chapter 14 says, in their presumption, they went up. And the Amalekites and the Canaanites gave them a terrible beating and sent them back down to spend a whole generation wandering in the wilderness because they had refused to trust God's promise. My friend, sometimes God speaks to us very clearly. He gives us enormous opportunities to serve him, to bring great glory to his name, and to experience his richest blessing. If because of fear and unbelief we miss these opportunities, they may not come again. Within days of the spies' return, a repentant Israel was ready to do the will of God, but their moment had passed. The opportunity was gone, and they lived the rest of their lives with the bitter memory of what might have been. May God call all of us to respond in faith when his call is clear.